Good evening, friends. Welcome to another session of Bards Rise. I am your host, Michael Dean. Today, first of all, before we begin, I'd just like to say thank you to my subscribers. I truly, truly do appreciate it. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you all. Today's session is going to be called Federal Judges Are Felons Too. So, first, some housekeeping. If anybody's been to my webpage, you'll notice, like in slide two, there's a picture of a very buff and well-haired man. That was not my doing. That was BBS. Thank you, thank you, thank you, BBS. I appreciate it. However, truth be told, I'm more of a combination between Mr. Clean and Kitty in Shrek 2, the nice plump kitty. So, housekeeping, twin flames. Last week, I mentioned twin flames. I was talking to a friend of mine, and she had questions about, you know, doing clearings on her twin flame. So she decided to reach out to CLS and ask the question if she could do that, do clearings for her twin flame. And the response that she received is cut and pasted right into slide number four, and I'll read it to you. If he's on this earth plane, you can run any clearings you wish for him. They will need to be purchased in his name. Do you know what problems he's having? Blessings, live in peace, the CLS team. So there you have it. You can do them for your twin flame if you know who he or she is. All the best to you and whatever you decide to do with that. Continuing with healing, last week I also mentioned Saskia. I talked to you about her podcast and her website, and that she's a light being, but she chooses to be a red fire-breathing dragon. That puts a new concept on the term, she's hot. Nevertheless, all kidding aside, I was listening to her show, her podcast, which the photo for it, the banner is on slide six. It's called the Happy New Now Show. She's on it with Molly, Tracy, and Saskia. And Saskia mentioned that sometimes people get abducted and the aliens actually put radiation on them. And as a result, your computers just don't work. They go screwy. And I've been having that issue for weeks, and I couldn't figure out what it was. So lo and behold, I'm going to schedule another session with her. And I put her, it's much easier to schedule a session with her if you go to her Telegram channel, column 17, go within, and just search for Book with Saskia in that channel, and you'll find the post that is on slide six to the right, and it's really easy to book with her like that. Also healing. I saw another post, healing with pharmacy, F-A-R-M-A-C-Y, and it has a list of all these different vegetables that are good for specific body parts. I've seen stuff like this in passing. I never really paid attention to it, but this was a great post because for me, because it just, you know, captured everything and it was right there, nice and concise. So that's slide seven. Slide eight. I sent a video that I found about growing our auras and how our auras can disturb others. And I sent it to a few friends and I received lots of positive feedback from that. They resonated with it. A lot. And again, that was several of my friends. So I'm putting the link to that on slide eight for you. For those of us who are growing our auras, there is a change, not just within us, but how others react to us. And this will help you understand some of the things that you are probably experiencing if you're growing your aura. All of us certainly have. Next. The new shout-out segment for Bards Rising. I have three stories that I'd like to just briefly touch on. The first one, and these are all posts or quick clips that you can go and find on the internet if you're interested in seeing more about these stories. But the first one on slide nine is about a woman who decided to withhold her tax payments until the local council could actually prove how her money was being spent. So they started sending letters to her, and she returned them with, go F yourselves, you know, you can fill in the rest. And because of that, she was paid a visit at her house by two police officers. And I watched this video and I'm sitting there saying, I can't believe that this is actually happening. She brought up how they might be, wasting funds and what's happening with our money. They're wasting taxpayers' monies. And the police had the audacity to say, well, that's a civil matter. We don't do civil matter. And then she invites them to sit down, and then they start lecturing her on whether she thought that her responses to the council were appropriate. Well, tell me, where in the criminal statute, whether it's here or in the United Kingdom, where whether or not something is rude and appropriate is listed? It's not. So if you don't enforce criminal law for individual citizens, or you only enforce criminal law for the individual citizens, then why don't you do that for the council as well? Right? There's two different standards going on here. And the police in the UK are not the only ones that do that. I've actually had a police officer start asking me, well, that's kind of rude what you decided to do. And it really wasn't. He just didn't understand all the facts. But I looked at him and I was like, so even if it is rude, that's not your job. You're not the manor police, right? So, yes, I want to support the police, but sometimes they make it really, really hard. You all need to clean your own house and get your ducks in line. And I'm sure a lot more people would be happy to support you if you did wholeheartedly. The next post is a story about Citizen Journalism Foundation. They go in undercover journalism and, break certain stories. This one had to do with an expose of human trafficking down at the border. And I thought that was absolutely tremendous. People pushing back, getting the word out there, letting them know, letting people know. And then the final one is about animals. There were these, I just love this clip. There were four, maybe five dogs chasing this one cat. And then out from nowhere came another cat and fought off those dogs and gave his friend, the first cat, time to get away. And then it ran away. And the whole time, Bonnie Tyler is singing in the background, singing, I need a hero. What a tremendous clip. Whoever did that, kudos on you. It was great. Great entertainment, great fun. Now, before we get into today's subject, hardcore stuff, which is going to be kind of dry because I'm going to do a lot of legal stuff, legalese. There are a couple truisms that we have to keep in mind. First, we are supposed to be a government of laws, not of men, right? We got away from laws of men, the king. The king was everything. He was the executive, he was the legislative, he was ju the judiciary, if he so deemed so. And whatever he said was law, whenever he said it. Doesn't matter if you had fair notice of it or not. We got away from that. We want something more standard, right? Slower, more deliberate, instead of going by the whim of men or now women. Unfortunately, we have slipped back from that and we have gotten into a government of men. And the secret handshake club has a lot to do with that. The next truism: silence becomes a kind of crime when it operates as a cover or an encouragement to the guilty. And this was Thomas Paine way back when, at the founding of this nation. Since then, our laws, federal and state, have developed to where if someone has a duty to act and they fail to act, they're just as guilty as the person who was doing the initial acting. So, if a cop sees a crime taking place and he doesn't stop the crime or try and do something to intervene, it can legitimately be said that he is a co-conspirator because he's allowing it to happen, but he has a duty to stop it. We're going to see how that plays out in today's session. And then finally, Martin Luther King Jr. While imprisoned in an Alabama jail, I believe it was Birmingham, Alabama, for peaceful demonstrations, he wrote a letter challenging the authorities at the time. And one of his now famous lines in that letter is, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And that certainly is true for today. Okay. And then finally, the last piece of background you should know is Iraq. Every law student that ever existed, at least in this country, was taught the acronym IRAC. This is the model that judges are supposed to use when deciding cases. And you say, well, what does IRAC stand for? 14. IRAC stands for issue, rule, application, and conclusion. 15. Issue to be resolved. What's the issue to be resolved in this case? Okay, once that's determined, then the judge needs to identify what rule applies. Because maybe the rule that the parties are saying applies really doesn't, and he needs to explain which rule applies and why. Then he applies the rules to the facts of the case. And then finally, he comes out with a conclusion, a written decision. Without fear or favor as to the results, he's supposed to, or she is supposed to, just announce what the ruling is. Facts and law. Justice, they're supposed to met out, right? What they're not supposed to do is what's on slide 16. They're not supposed to first pick the conclusion that they want, then they figure out the application of an appropriate rule to justify that conclusion, and then cherry pick the issues or the facts to support the conclusion that they want to get to. That is judicial activism. That is essentially an activist judge, a treasonous judge, because he violates his oath or her oath to the Constitution to uphold the laws faithfully without regard to personal favor. Fortunately, that doesn't happen all the time. In fact, that's probably a rare case if you were to come across that these days. And just look what's going out there with President Trump and these rogue district court judges making these ridiculous rulings. Nationwide rulings, when you're a rinky-dink little district judge, your authority doesn't extend past your district, and the circuit court's jurisdiction doesn't extend past their circuit. So who are they to bind the president? And besides, they're only at the lower level, right? That's like saying a lone senator or a lone congressman is equal to the president because the legislative branch is co-equal with the executive. Well, yes, but only when they act as a whole, not individual congressmen or senators. We don't have hundreds of little presidents running around. Only when they speak with one voice are they equal. Likewise, only when the U.S. Supreme Court speaks with one voice, i.e., a majority, is the judiciary equal to the executive. A little rinky-dink district judge, even in the Southern District of New York, or a circuit court judge who's at the appellate, right, just below the U.S. Supreme Court, they are not co-equal with the president. They're just not. And finally, I've seen, I think it was Speaker Johnson, submitted or introduced legislation to restrict, specifically restrict, the authority of district judges to rule, to make nationwide rulings. They should extend that to the circuit courts as well. Circuit courts shouldn't be able to bind the entire nation. So I'd like to see an amendment to that, and hopefully somebody will consider that. And finally, one thing that didn't make the news, and I'd like to point out recently, just earlier this week, I saw that President Trump directed the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, to look into the violation of Second Amendment rights throughout the country. So, rightfully so, Pam Bondi put out a point paper saying that she was, or memorandum, excuse me, saying that she was organizing a task force to comply with President Trump's directive. And on that task force was going to be her, Kash Patel, the director of the FBI, the director of the Civil Rights Division, and a couple other key players within the Department of Justice. I mean, this is no committee that's going to fall between the cracks, right? She picked the top honchos within the Department of Justice to be on this committee. She's taking it very, very seriously. She also left herself room that she can bring on additional people as needed and as she decides. So she's definitely on the ball and she's taking this and running. And I just couldn't help but smile when I saw that because just a week, maybe 2 weeks ago, I explained how New York State has a custom and policy statewide, right, throughout the entire judiciary of violating Second Amendment rights. So hopefully they'll take notice of New York's policy, unconstitutional and criminal policy, and respond appropriately. Can't wait to see these corrupt state local judges go to jail as they deserve to. They're the biggest punks on the block. Okay, so now today I'm going to show how federal judges are felons. We start with a petition that I filed in federal district court, Southern District of New York, when I was going through my divorce and custody proceedings. It was abundantly apparent to me after having practiced law, being admitted to the New York bar for about 20 years and practicing in local, state, and federal courts at the trial and appellate levels, that I was not getting due process. I was being railroaded, right? It was the first time it was happening to me. I've since gotten accustomed to it. But at the time, it was very shocking. I knew something had to change. I knew what they were doing to me, as well as my children, was just not just wrong, not just unethical, not just unconstitutional, but it was outright criminal. People should have gone to jail for what they did to my children and me. But I wasn't worried about jail. I just wanted a fair shot, right? The biggest issue was that the deck is stacked. I'm not getting due process. I'm not being heard. These people are abusing me and ganging up on me, and I need help. So I filed a complaint in federal court, and I named the court-appointed attorney for the children, my ex-wife's lawyer, the judge in federal court, or excuse me, family court at the time, as well as some CPS workers, because none of them were paying attention to the facts that I submitted. All of them were making up facts. Just it was absolutely astonishing. It was like something out of a movie. And you might say, well, judges have judicial immunity. Right? Everybody knows that. Well, yes, but it depends, right? Depends on what you're asking for. A judge doesn't have judicial immunity for prospective relief, right? They only have judicial immunity if they are acting within the judicial capacity and not in the complete absence of all jurisdiction. If they're doing that, then yes, you can sue them. And that was my argument. Why? Because I filed the complaint, right? And then the judge, I'm sorry, I knew something was going on. I filed the complaint, and then the judge recused herself. She didn't have to, but she automatically did. And a judge is required to recuse themselves when they cannot be impartial. So that right there automatically proved my case. Right? She had absolutely no jurisdiction to do that when she recused herself. As a result of me filing that lawsuit, In addition, he had court-appointed attorney for the children and my ex-wife's lawyer, her second lawyer actually, withdrew from the case because their malpractice carriers made them withdraw. Why would they do that? Because they had conflicts of interest. They shouldn't have been on the cases. They shouldn't have been practicing within the courts that they were practicing in. So the fix was on, and everybody knew it, but nobody said anything. Of course not, because it's Mike Dean. We have to, quote, get Mike Dean, right? And we're trying to do that for years. So to speed this up, slide 18, I filed my complaint. I'm not including, I only included a snippet of that complaint on the left side of slide 18. You can see I highlighted some of the paragraphs. Paragraph 131, the proceedings before Judge Gordon Oliver, the family court judge, were, quote, judicial, close quote, in name only. They were, in fact, sham proceedings used maliciously, willfully, and deviously to deny plaintiff his rights to parental relations, due process, and property. I wasn't complaining that, I needed to get custody, right? It's federal. Right, or excuse me, parental rights are recognized and protected under the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. And the U.S. Supreme Court has several cases where it upheld parental rights. So I was looking at exercising or protecting my federal rights, most importantly, to due process, because I was getting hosed. Paragraph 132, defendant's misconduct is all done in bad faith and gives rise to extraordinary circumstances that pose great, immediate, irreparable, and ongoing harm to plaintiff and his children. Now, those are all buzzwords to say, I really need your help, right? There's something wrong going on over here, and I'm reaching out to you, federal courts, for help. This is completely within your bailiwick. We're talking about federal rights here. Well, the allegations in a complaint are supposed to be taken as true, but not mine, not me. Before we could even get an answer in and appear before the court, the case was dismissed by the judge that was assigned, Nelson S. Roman. Nelson S. Roman, yes. A living example that cream is not the only thing that floats. Nelson S. Roman dismissed the case before anybody even showed up. And some of the reasons of why he dismissed it, we'll get into. But I just want you to show, I want to show you the sense of what was going on here. Now, I brought the case, obviously, in my own personal capacity with the people that I was involved with at the family court level, right? But yet he takes the liberty and the time to drop a footnote right on page one so that everybody will see it when they see this order. The first one of the first things you're gonna that's gonna draw your attention, right? Footnote one. The court notes that plaintiff, me, is suspended from practicing law in this court. In re Michael Deem, and he gives the citation for that order. The court further notes that plaintiff does not mention anywhere in his original complaint or amended complaint that he is an attorney or that he is suspended from practicing law in this court. He repeats the suspension part, right? Well, tell me, why the fuck do I need to bring that up? Why is that relevant? It's not. It's not at all. But he did this, as they say, sui generis. In other words, of his own volition, with no rhyme or reason behind it other than to sully me, right? It's all part of the gaslighting. Make him look bad, make us and the other side look good, even if it's all about bullshit. There you have it. Nelson S. Roman. He is the husband of what many consider to be a, quote, power couple within New York City politics. I guess his wife was, at least at the time, some deputy mayor in New York City under Mayor Bloomberg. That's right, the guy who's seen in pictures, and I have them, with Masonic stances, extending Masonic handshakes. People that I know that are reliable say that Bloomberg was running a restaurant down there in New York City when he was mayor. In other words, you pay the right money to the right people and you get the job that you want. That's what it's all about. But a power couple. And one of his claims to fame was he actually nominated or put the name in for Sonia Sotomayor to be nominated to the U.S. Supreme Court, because never had there been a Puerto Rican judge, you know, appointed to the court. And Obama jumped on it and he named her. That's how we got Sonia Sotomayor. Okay, so he obviously threw out the case, and now we're going to just skip straight to the decision from the Second Circuit. I appealed, and I gave my reasons for appealing, and I lost on appeal at the Second Circuit. The judges that I was in front of were Winter, Pooler, and Sullivan. Three more living examples that cream is not the only thing that floats. The U.S. military, in their regulations, has a provision where if you're retired, regardless of rank, and you're receiving a pension, they can call you back to active duty for something that you did while you were on active duty years before and court-martial you for that misconduct. I'm sure that the DOJ has a similar provision. And if they do, it needs to be exercised for the four judges that I've mentioned. At least, I'm going to get into more. Something to be considered. Because what these people did was, it was criminal. It was outright criminal. And I'll get to it in a second. So, slide 19, if we go to the right side, more gaslighting and puffery, right? We affirm the dismissal of Deem's claims against Judge Gordon Oliver substantially for the reasons set forth in the district court's well-reasoned decision. It wasn't well-reasoned. It was a piece of crap. And if you have any judicial legal experience, you can point that out. You'd be able to recognize that. And hopefully I'll be able to convey that to you all. He summarily concluded that Judge Gordon Oliver was acting in her judicial capacity based exclusively on my papers, which are supposed to be taken as true, which alleged that she was not acting in judicial capacity. She was acting in judicial capacity in name only, which means that she would be completely devoid of jurisdiction. And which means that I can sue her. But they don't want to go there because the federal judges provide the cover for the state and local judges to hose each and every one of us, the goyim. The hardworking guy or gal that doesn't have the connections, that doesn't have the secret handshakes to get what they want. So, going to slide 20. The court goes in to describe the domestic relations exception and abstention. Now, I'm not going to get into all this detail, just roughly. Federal courts really, really don't like getting into domestic relations cases. They see that as below them, right? That's just for the common little state courts. We are federal courts. Very snobby. There's two ways to get into the federal courts. Predominantly, there are exceptions to this, but predominantly, either a federal question, there's a federal right involved, or a statute gives you the authority to bring a lawsuit in federal court, or diversity. If someone from one state hurt somebody from another state, which state do you sue in? We're going to go to federal court because that kind of like evens the playing field, so to speak. Well, historically, this is going back over 100 years, it's got to be now, that federal courts just don't get involved with domestic relations because Domestic or the domestic courts, the state courts, they have the expertise in that, so therefore let them do that. And that's how they justify not getting involved. There are two ways of not getting involved. You can say that there's a specific rule, a doctrine that says that we must abstain, or there's a special doctrine that says there's an exception. So the exception is what I referred to earlier, right? You may be talking about these things that may touch on federal rights, but you know what? We're not going to get involved anyway. So they just push it to the side. And that's usually when a party, well, it is when a party is seeking something like custody, alimony support, and there's another one, visitation, I believe, right? So those are the hard three areas where the exception applies. And even the Supreme Court has said, yes, in these three areas, federal courts will not get involved. Okay. And the most recent case for that is, hold on. It's not the immediate slide, forgive me. It's on slide 24. Ackenbrandt v. Richards, 504 U.S. 689. It was decided in 1992. There, the snippet for that says federal courts do have jurisdiction over cases involving domestic relations if they do not involve seeking the granting or modification of a divorce or alimony decree based on dicta in this 1859 case of Barber v. Barber. A more recent extension to this doctrine includes decrees in child custody cases. So there's three types. However, the plaintiff in that case, Ankenbrock, is not seeking to modify or obtain any of these three types of decrees, since her claim is based on a tort theory. Federal jurisdiction thus is proper. Okay? So even though we have this exception doctrine where we're not going to take custody, federal courts will not get involved for those three types of cases. If it's a tort type theory, we will get involved. Okay? Now let's go back to the page I was talking about before. And then the abstention. The abstention is basically when the courts just say, yeah, I know you can bring this, but for policy reasons, we're just not going to entertain this case or these types of cases. So one is an exception, the other one is abstention. Don't get wrapped around the difference, but know that there is a difference for those three types of cases for domestic relations. But except for those three, it is proper to bring federal question torts jurisdiction cases involving domestic relations to federal court. At least it's supposed to be that way. In this decision on page 20, the Second Circuit cited a case, American Airlines. Now, typically in a case when, or in a decision, when a case is cited for the first time, you give the authority the complete citation for that case. So this one, this way, everybody knows exactly what you're talking about. And they know the weight that that case carries. Because if it's from a completely jurisdiction, well, then you know it doesn't really apply. You want something from the court that you're in or higher within your chain. So something from the appellate court, let's say the Second Circuit, if you're in New York at the district level, the lowest level, that would be good, or the U.S. Supreme Court. An appellate decision from, let's say, the Fifth Circuit or the 10th Circuit doesn't really apply that much. I mean, it helps you a little bit, but it doesn't really apply. Here, this court that ruled against me cited American Airlines. And I count at least two, three, four times where, oh, three times before it gives the full citation. And on the fourth time, it finally does. Oh, look at that. It's from that own court. So they're just citing to themselves and as authority. Puts everything into question, right? It's like, wait a minute. You know, what about the U.S. Supreme Court? It hasn't weighed in on this issue? Well, it has. But this court doesn't like the Supreme Court precedent. And it feels it doesn't, in fact, doesn't just feel, it's actually stated it doesn't have to follow U.S. Supreme Court precedent. Stay tuned. So here we have on slide 21, a quick snapshot of the American Airlines decision, just the very heading, right? The heading of it. And it gives you the docket number in case you're interested. It does show it's from the Second Circuit. It was decided in 1990. So now, at that time, it was, what, 25 years old? Forgive me. So the decision continues, right? And they get into the abstention. Abstention based on domestic relations concerns is merely a variant of these other two types of abstentions. So they're trying to find justification for their own little rule of abstention and trying to, you know, hook it up to stuff that the U.S. Supreme Court has said, yes, this is good. They're just making shit up and they're trying to justify it, right? Call a spade a spade. This is a court absolutely lying through its teeth, but trying to protect itself and trying to justify its decision. And it keeps going into, you know, using the term domestic relations. But meanwhile, if you look at what the district court said, he said that my case involved claims on the verge of domestic relations, on the verge. So that's another way of saying that my claims were not involving domestic relations. They could be on the verge as much as you want them to be, but they're not. But you guys don't like that, right? So you're just going to fudge it. It's not, but we're going to make believe that it is. And then once we make believe that it is in this part of the decision, we're going to talk about it as if it actually is a domestic relations case. And it's not. It's just a bold-faced lie, right? This is judicial activism at its finest. This is a complete abrogation of their oath and the U.S. Constitution at its finest. And we continue on to slide 23, and this is the real kicker, right? So in that case that I referenced, Achenbrandt v. Richards, the U.S. Supreme Court has specifically said that in federal tort or federal question cases, federal courts do have jurisdiction, even if it involves domestic relations cases. Okay? They don't like that. So we go back up to slide 23, and it says here, this is the decision where they deny me, right? I lost. After I brought a case involving several federal question, federal civil rights issues that did not involve domestic relations. I mean, the underlying issues involved domestic relations, but my complaint was with due process and a corrupt court system, a corrupt judicial system. That's what I was trying to address, okay? And another thing, all the people I sued, except one, I never even had a domestic relationship with. If you're going to hold me to a domestic relations exception or a domestic relations abstention doctrine, shouldn't I at least have a domestic relationship with the people that I'm suing? You would think, right? But no, they couldn't care about that either. And yes, I did bring that up in my papers and at oral argument. Nobody ever addressed it because it was fait accompli. The hit was on, starting with the district judge, Nelson S. Roman. Oh, and by the way, I would love, in assigning cases, they're supposed to use a wheel, right? A random numbers that are selected, and that's the judge that you get. I would love to know how many times they spun that wheel. The number of times that I pulled Nelson S. Roman as my judge, and he summarily dismissed the case without even giving me an opportunity to show up in court. It was at least two, I think three times, which is unheard of, right? And I had him far too many times for it to be random. The number for the judicial wheel is supposed to be annotated in the case file. I challenge the now honest DOJ to look at that file. There are shenanigans going on in the Southern District of New York. They don't use the wheel for every case like they're supposed to. They pick and choose depending on who's filing the complaint and who they want to, I guess, engage in subterfuge with, right? Who they're going to put the hit on. So, again, sorry for the aside. Let's go back to this footnote in the case where they threw out my appeal and said this: our decision today to uphold the domestic relations abstention doctrine is consistent with our unbroken practice of citing American Airlines, that's their own case, when upholding, comma, in unpublished decisions, comma, the dismissal of both federal question and diversity cases involving domestic relations disputes. And then they have a string citation where they list several cases where they applied this rule. So in other words, I'm not the only guy that they hose several other people, and they're going to just keep doing it. This is proof positive that they are absolute criminals. Because first of all, like I showed you before, right? The acronym IRAC, issue, rule, application of the rule, and then finally conclusion. Nowhere in there is whether or not the decision is going to be published or not. It's not supposed to be a factor. You just come out with the decision, and what happens with it after that, who cares? So even if it was in that acronym, it would be the very, very last thing after the conclusion. So this is proof positive. This is an absolute admission that they peek to see what the conclusion is that they want and where that conclusion is going to be published, and then go and justify that decision. Gross violation of their judicial oath. Gross violation of my federal and my children's commensurate federal rights. And then here they say that it's consistent with them dismissing all these questions in both federal question and diversity cases involving domestic relations. Well, wait a minute. What do you mean federal question? You're going to dismiss a case involving federal question? It's not a domestic relations. And the court said, unless you're seeking one of those three things, child custody, alimony, or divorce, you can bring a lawsuit in federal court for federal questions, even if it involves domestic relations. So here in this footnote, they're basically flipping the finger to the U.S. Supreme Court, saying, shove it up your ass. We're not going to listen to domestic cases or domestic relationship cases, even if those cases don't have a domestic relationship like Michael Dean. And even if they don't ask for one of those three cases, which means it's really not a domestic relationship case. This is, and by doing this, they're giving the green light to state courts throughout their district, which includes New York, Connecticut, and Vermont, to say, go ahead, do whatever you want. We got your back. And boy, did New York take the ball and run with it. Wait, there's more coming, folks. But this footnote is, to this day, I am absolutely flabbergasted at the audacity that these three people had to write this footnote, to put it in everybody's faces. And if that's not bad enough, well, before I got that decision, right, they just brought in new people and the targeting continued. So what did I do? I sued those people as well. And I in a separate lawsuit, different people, same bullshit. And what happened? Well, you can guess. I'm sorry. Let me just back up. So I got that decision back. It was by those three judges. That's what's called a panel, right? The entire Second Circuit has, I think, I don't know, 20, maybe 30 judges. And that's the entire court. So, but not the entire court doesn't sit on every single appeal. They just assign panels, three, 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 three. And what those three judges decide will bind the entire Second Circuit. Well, sometimes you can ask for a motion to have the entire circuit sit together and decide it, all 20 or 30 judges, whatever it is. So I file that motion. And it's called a motion for hearing en banc. And I have some excerpts on it on slide 25. And you can see I highlighted the three arguments. The first one, I'm saying in bank, everybody needs to sit and review this because in order to align that court's practice, the Second Circuit's practice and decisions with Supreme Court precedent regarding abstention. But they couldn't care less. They deny my motion. And there's two other things that I pointed out. Another one was the trial judge actually, he sanctioned me. He claimed that my claim against the family court judge was frivolous. And what basis did he ground his decision in? The Prisoners Litigation Reform Act. I wasn't a prisoner. Nobody was a prisoner. Nobody was in jail. Jail wasn't even referenced at that time, right? But yet he goes and finds a law that didn't even apply to this and says because facts support sanctions in that case against those type of people, I'm going to sanction you here. Even though that case didn't apply to me, the nature of my underlying case, right, or the claims that I was pursuing, it's just complete bullshit. But he wanted to sanction me. Again, more piling on, more targeting. Moving along to slide 26. This is just 26, 27. 28, they all involve the my motion. I pretty much put the whole thing so you can see it there. The motion was decided, was denied. No surprise there. But by doing that, I got them to show their colors. In other words, the whole court is now saying, screw you, you're not worth it. We're going to continue to flip our middle finger at the US Supreme Court. So it's no longer up to just these two of the three judges that were assigned, right? The entire court is involved in their rule to not hear, to abstain from all types of domestic relations cases, which means that the entire Second Circuit, everybody that was sitting at that time or has enforced that rule since then, should be impeached and thrown off the bench at the very least. So, before I filed that motion, like I said, I brought a second lawsuit. Of course, that got denied for the same reasons. All the district judges, you know, one parrots the other, can't make the other one look bad and come up with another decision that actually gives this guy a bite at the apple, right? So I appealed that, and then I got a decision, summary decision from judges Kearse, Cabranes, and Park. Three more living examples that cream is not the only thing that floats. And in their decision, they write, part of what they wrote was 42 USC, right? I've brought claims under 42 USC Section 1983 for violations of the First, Second, Ninth, and 14th Amendments. So they acknowledge that my claims had nothing to do with domestic relations. They were federal question claims. And I alleged that, my ex and her lawyer conspired with the family court judge to deny him due process and extend temporary order of protection against him that prohibited me from contacting his children, 14th Amendment federal rights, parental rights, right? And practicing his religion, First Amendment, with them, or accessing his guns, Second Amendment. The district court dismissed the complaint, reasoning inter alia, amongst other things, that the Meladim and Eichen were not state actors. You don't have to be. You can conspire with them, and then you're considered a state actor. That the defendant judges were entitled to judicial immunity. How can that be? We never had a hearing. It was based strictly on pleadings that should have been taken as true and said that they didn't have immunity, and that it should abstain under domestic relations abstention doctrine. Really, the U.S. Supreme Court said that you can hear these cases. It is absolutely ridiculous. This isn't just an errant decision. This, I firmly believe and know, is prosecutable under slide 31, 18 U.S.C. section 242, deprivation of rights under color of law. I had a right to go to federal court. They closed the doors on Tommy for some bullshit reason that's in violation of U.S. Supreme Court precedent and the U.S. Constitution. At what point do we say it's no longer just an honest mistake? They've been doing it for years. They know what the law is. They're charged with knowledge of the law, but yet they couldn't care less. Also, slide 32. This one, they should be prosecuted under 18 U.S.C. Section 241, conspiracy against rights. Because, like I started this little dialogue, that if you have a duty to act and you fail to act, well, that's considered an affirmative act under criminal statutes, right? It's just like some guy picked up a gun and pointed it at you and pulled the trigger. That's an affirmative act. Well, if you have a duty to stop that and you don't, barring that, it's not like you can't get there. Your legs are broken, so you can't run to the guy, Aside from all those possibilities, if you have the ability and duty to interfere and you can, perform your duty, but you choose not to for whatever reason, for whatever unjustifiable reason, you should be prosecuted. And here they're conspiring with all those state court actors and my ex-wife to deny me my federal rights aside from the actual divorce and the alimony and the custody proceedings, right? I was denied due process and everything else. I'm entitled to compensation and retribution and a correction in the judicial process for all of that stuff. But they couldn't care less. And they have the duty and obligation to fix it. They didn't, which means that they conspired. They gave them protection. It's no more than, the strong-armed guy enforcing the rights or the mafia's muscle, right? That's what they are. They're the muscle. So I hope this was beneficial, folks. Stay tuned. I have more coming up. I love you all. Sorry for being a little bit passionate, but I can't help but react to absolute criminality in our court system. It drives me absolutely crazy. I love you all. I'll talk to you next week. BBS, please take it away.